Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Justin Hall, Randy Page joining you today. It is Thursday, July the 10th in the year of our Lord 2025. If you're watching us or listening to us on your vacation, happy vacation. We're glad you're taking some time out to have a conversation with us today. We're joined by Congresswoman Nancy Mace. A lot going on across the country. The big, beautiful bill, SCOTUS decisions, and a lot happening here in South Carolina as we gear up for the midterms. There's a lot to get to. So, Randy, why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
Great. Thank you so much, Justin. And Congresswoman Mace, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today. As Justin mentioned in the open, we've got a number of Supreme Court decisions that have come down, whether we're talking about Medina, Scrimeti, Paxton, or Mahmoud. And just really wanted to get your perspective on how those impact us here in South Carolina and across the nation culturally and, you know, politically.
Well, these particular decisions, they're monumental for the United States, for states like South Carolina, too, allowing states not to fund abortion vis-a-vis paying Planned Parenthood. You know, that's a big deal. Restricting gender-affirming care, which I only recently learned that was castrating kids. Like, that should not be a thing, but allowing states to restrict that kind of abusive, barbaric medical care, which is not medical care at all. It's disgusting. But it reinforces the Constitution. It reinforces states' rights and federalism and the ability for states to take these stands and say no to some of the crazy, sick, and evil ideology that has infiltrated the U.S. government all around the country.
Not only that, but they're one of these cases dealt with the free speech issue is specifically in schools, and in South Carolina, we've Palmetto Family's been at the forefront of this. We've identified many books inside of South Carolina school libraries that are borderline pornographic, and I ascribe to and go further than the you know it when you see it idea, but this particular case allows parents to exercise religious freedom. And I think that's, I thought we had that figured out with the First Amendment. And yet here we are in 2025 having to reaffirm that.
Here we are. And then how did these books end up in our libraries? We just found some in Charleston County, and they are borderline pornographic, and they're pushing a very sick ideology. And it's, you know, I used to be a little skeptical, but now I've seen this with my own eyes, and I've been red-pilled a couple times over the last couple years, and like, this is literally grooming children. Why does a kindergartner need to read a rainbow book about how she is a boy? Like, I can't, to me, it's so crazy, but it's not just school libraries. We have state-funded colleges and universities in South Carolina that there are taxpayer dollars are funding this crap. Like, look at some of the universities I have in the last couple of months, whether it's Clemson or Carolina or Coastal Carolina, where they had, in Clemson's case, 15 genders on a form, and male and female were not two of the options. Ended up, it was a medical form. And within 3 hours of me calling the president, calling them out for it, they took it down. And in Carolina's case, at USC, they had a form for genders for their dormitories that allowed 13 genders. Come to find out, a lot of these schools and universities, like Furman, allow men to share women's spaces in locker rooms and dormitories. And then in Coastal Carolina's case, they were promoting cross-dressing on their website. Why are we allowing state and federally funded schools to push this on our students? Because even in college, I know they're adults, but their minds are still being formed ideologically. They're supposed to know science, and the stuff they're pushing isn't science, and it's abhorrent. And you've got these professors who are tenured. You should see some of the crap, this evilness coming out of our own state colleges and universities, all the way down to our elementary schools. I just found some books out of the public library that are pushing this ideology onto kids. And so it's just, as a state, we have to have every tool in the toolbox to push back on this and say, oh, absolutely not. And I have to tell you, I didn't realize how bad it was. And I've got kids, my kids are a little bit older now. I didn't really understand how bad it was until the last couple of years. And I just have finally I've been awakened to it, and I am just, I know, like, I just cannot handle the idea that this stuff's being pushed on toddlers. Not gonna
Yeah,
happen.
and
Yeah,
it
it's
and incredible. So, and I think for so many of us, like you said, you really didn't know the breadth of it.
yeah.
And then we've seen videos of parents standing up at school boards
Yeah.
and starting to read from these things, and then being told that they can't read that in public. And so I'm
Right.
sitting here going, if an adult cannot read it to other adults in public, then why on earth is it available to children? And I think a lot of people have really started to see that and go, this is just wrong.
And we're supposed to be a conservative state.
Right?
And what happened to that? That's my biggest question is we have, as a conservative supermajority state, we've allowed this to happen everywhere, every county, every school. And taxpayers are paying for it. That's not what we voted for.
So we mentioned off the top the marathon of last week, and there was a lot of robust conversation, some of it lasting for over 8 hours, about the Big Beautiful Bill, and a lot of binders being used and scripture out of context. And so because of that, but now we move past that. That bill has been signed. That reconciliation package has been signed into law. It is now the law of the land, and it will begin to take its effect throughout the country. And attention is quickly shifting to midterm races after that, because I guess people think that the job's done. How are families in South Carolina going to be impacted specifically by that bill, in just in any sort of ways, Congresswoman?
Well, first of all, the biggest and best part of the bill were the tax cuts that are going to help the middle class. They're going to help hard workers and families because the government takes and takes and takes, and it's time for the government to give some of that back. And so having Trump's tax cuts in that bill, number one, is going to put more money into everyday hardworking South Carolina residents' pockets and purses, number one, which is great. I would love to see the state follow suit. We have the highest state income tax in the Southeast, makes us less competitive with our neighbors to the north, like North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, and then to the south and Florida. So our state has to follow suit on that. But also, secondarily, beefing up our border patrol. So in South Carolina, we have a border patrol training academy. So we'll see more border patrol training academy students come through South Carolina through that academy. We'll have more ICE agents that are being hired. As you all have, some of you seen the headlines, we've had recently members of Tren de Agua arrested in South Carolina. There was a bust in Berkeley County of about 67 illegals, and like a baby were found at this bar for illegals or whatever. And there are Sinaloa cartel here. There are places in South Carolina where you have entire neighborhoods that were taken over by the cartel. That is right here in South Carolina. So hiring more ICE agents is going to be enormously helpful for our state when we're our local sheriffs and police departments are working with ICE, being able to identify, have more ICE agents to deport, arrest and deport those people who are here illegally, because they're everywhere in South Carolina. MS-13, Sinaloa cartel, Tren de Agua, the worst of the worst, they're here. And then secondly, I think third, the beefing up our military defenses. So ensuring that we're investing more in our military is also going to benefit South Carolina. We have a number of bases, including Parris Island, where we make Marines. There are only two places in the entire country where Marines go through basic training, and our state's one of them. We also have Joint Base Charleston, which has the different military bases there. But we've been involved in some very big operations out of South Carolina. You got Shaw Air Force Base, Fort Jackson, et cetera. So all of that you'll see, all of that will help South Carolina too.
Fantastic. And I know, obviously I've worked in school choice for a number of years. And I know there were some school choice provisions, back and forth between the House and the Senate. Where did we kind of end up on school choice in the One Big Beautiful Bill?
I know that it's in there. I don't know how far down it goes for the states.
Sure.
I'm still waiting on us to dismantle the Department of Education and block grant all those
That's
funds
it. That's right.
down to the
Sounds great.
states. And as you know, Randy, you've been working on school choice for a very long time. What, 20 years have we been saying? Our conservative
Yes.
peers have been saying, "Oh, we're going to do this now, by golly," and then we don't. I know that there's some constitutional barriers to this, but I do believe that where there's a will, there's a way. And if the
Absolutely.
Constitution is the problem, then let's fix that. But I do believe that we should be able to do it as a state, and we have to work harder on that. I have drafted school choice legislation at the federal level. So what is in the Big Beautiful Bill isn't big enough, I think, to really reach down to the states the way that it should. We're going to have to continue to work on that at the federal, but more importantly, at the state level. And so I think as soon as we can dismantle the DOE and get those block grants down to the states, we'll have a better opportunity to do that also.
One more quick
Absolutely.
question before we get to UPenn, because I think that's an issue that we all care deeply about. I want to go back to the debate on this bill, and I want to ask specifically about Speaker Johnson, because it's been widely bandied about how slim the majority is in the House, and I think we can all agree that it is a very slim House majority for the Republicans. The ability by the Speaker to work with the Senate Majority Leader and the President and all of you as members of the House to get that done the way he did it, what does that say about his leadership as Speaker, given the slim majority?
Given how slim it is, it's a very difficult crowd to work with because you've got members of Congress that are Republican that but they're representing very Democrat districts. And so even for a while there, our district was in limbo because when I came in, I only won by 1 point. I have since turned it into an R plus 18 because I focus on gender affirming care issues, because I've taken on trannies, because I'm protecting women and girls. We are in a much better spot here. So I understand the calculus. It's very difficult, but I don't think Speaker Johnson could do it without Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump got on the phone with these members, including a member from our own South Carolina delegation, to get them to flip and get them to understand how important this bill is. Now, we can go back and do another reconciliation. There is certainly more work to do because we're funding illegals on Medicaid still. And my understanding is too that government funding of gender affirming care is still in there. So there are things we've got to go back and fix in different pieces of legislation, but Johnson's the only one that could do it, but he had help with Donald Trump.
Absolutely, there's no doubt
Good.
about that.
Yes, absolutely.
Trump was on the phone with these guys. Like he was working it around the clock. That's what
Good.
this guy does. He's a machine.
Right. Well, obviously, one of the big issues of the election was men and women's sports. And it's just been interesting to see how the Trump administration has been very clear about their position. And to see even the movement at the University of Pennsylvania, even in this past week, after some push from the Trump administration, obviously that was a seminal moment, I think, in the election. What do you see this how this particular issue plays out, not only politically but culturally in South Carolina and across the nation?
Well, it's a losing issue for Democrats, and anyone still pushing this ideology is going to lose big time. I just ended Tim Walz's presidential aspirations in an oversight hearing the other day. He spent almost a half a million dollars, taxpayer dollars, to prepare for an oversight hearing before us. I asked him one question. I asked him, "What is a woman?" And he couldn't answer it. He said he didn't understand the question. And so when you're dealing with a party whose ideology says, "Hey, we protect women," but then they can't define one, you really don't, and you really don't respect women and women and girls. And it is a massively winning issue for us. I've been on the front end of this for a long time. I was an early adopter, and the party is, I believe, caught up and understands how big of an issue that this is. And if we continue to hammer home how sick their grooming ideology is, the perversion that's there, the ungodly perversion that exists, this evil perversion in the Democrat Party, we're going to continue to win. And Christians are going to continue to win because the only thing that saves us from this nasty evilness that's happening is our faith. And I think that this kind of thing that we're seeing in the way that it's being spread so quickly, I think people are going to the church in bigger numbers than they have before. I see it in my own church, but that's going to help society. That's going to help the family. And it's something that our country desperately needs right now. So, as awful as it is, I see a huge opportunity for us as Christians to spread our faith and say why this is the way. And being obedient to Christ gets us further away from this stuff and fixes all that they have broken, because our country is those who don't have the faith are misguided, They're led to the dark and not to the light. And that's what's wrong with big corners of our country. And I think this is going to drive people to Christ bigger and more before. And I think that is truly needed right now in the church life.
And we've seen the shift with UPenn, but wouldn't you agree, and maybe you can see this from a different angle, both representing the first and overall being in Congress and interacting with 430 some odd other people plus Senate colleagues. How have you seen the shift since, let's just say, November 5th, 2024, just throwing out a date? How have you seen that shift culturally, where we saw 99% of counties move to the right in some way, shape, or form in the last election? How have you seen that shift playing out?
Well, the gender, it's because of the trans issue. It's because of UPenn. It's because people like Riley Gaines, and she is a hero, being out on the front lines telling people what's really going on. I had no idea until literally like probably 2 or 3 years ago. I had an idea. I think like most people, like, okay, that's something that's out there. But no, I was like, I didn't realize how prevalent it was in the faces of our kids and our girls, and how abusive forcing little girls to share a locker room with a fully endowed male. I mean, I can't even, I just can't, I just, it blows my mind, but it's such a winning issue for us that we have to keep punching people in the face with it, figuratively, not literally, with the truth, because that's what's gotten us to where we are. That's what got Donald Trump elected. I think this issue was a huge one, but we're going to continue to win races. Everyone's saying, oh, big, beautiful bill is going to hurt our midterms. No, it's not. It's going to help because we cut taxes for the working class. But secondly, we're the only ones with common sense, and we're protecting very vulnerable girls when they come through as they're growing up. We're the ones doing that, and we have to brag about all the good work that we're doing to protect women and girls from this movement, because it'll continue to help us win major races all across the board, even in blue districts. And I look at my own seat, and I look at my race in November. Kamala Harris won Charleston County. I have half of Charleston County-ish or so. I won Charleston County. And so the two of us couldn't be any further apart ideologically, but I've won Charleston County every time I've had it, I think. So, you know, there's something to be said about telling the truth and protecting women and girls, because that tells me there are Democrats or independents that are left-leaning that they're not with their party on this crazy groomer thing. They're not with the party, and they want to be with us, and we got to give them a reason to come home.
That's Congresswoman Nancy Mace joining us on the Palmetto Family Matters show. You mentioned, Congresswoman, midterms are coming up. That's in 2026. Mm-hmm. There's also a race here. You want to announce anything or anything you want to? No? Now's the time. It's a safe space.
No, I know. I will decide by the end of summer. But okay. I'm not in a rush. And I know that, you know, running for governor is something to be taken very seriously. And there are serious issues facing our state, and I want to make sure that I listen to different folks around every corner of the state, because what I want to do for South Carolina hasn't ever been done before. We've really never tested the weakness or the strength of the governor's bully pulpit. And I think that if you have someone in there who's very strong, who is very conservative, and who is very effective at changing the direction of a district, a state, and a nation, that's something we desperately need right now. And that, like, it goes back to everything that we've talked about. Our state's been doing this. Our state has allowed some of these crazy things to be happening right under our noses, our legislature too. And it's not just cutting of taxes. It's our state's values. It's South Carolina values that we've lost. And I think we need to get back to that, but also law and order. We allowed a sanctuary sheriff in South Carolina last year who was letting out illegals who are rapists, murderers, and pedophiles. No one did anything. I mean, I did something. I spoke up and I screamed about it. And she lost in a county that Kamala won by double digits. The sanctuary sheriff lost by 1.5. And guess what? Carl Ritchie worked with ICE on day one. So it's like, what have we been doing for the last decade? And I really just scratched my head, and I think that they just gotten away with all this, and it's just, we're just going to do business as usual because that's what we always do. And the time for that is no more. And I'm seriously taking a look at it. I'm very excited about it, and I'll make a decision by the end of summer.
And then did Gavin Newsom respond to your debate request? Have you heard anything?
No,
from
not
the
at all. He's the guy. He's the guy. You know, challenging everybody to debate, and he's too scared to hit the stage with me. And it's a lowly congresswoman from South Carolina.
Oh, Ron didn't do him any favors the last time around either. So I have family in California. They're calling me saying, "Thank you. You want to keep him? You want to keep him? You know, he'd have to come back."
We don't want a California, South Carolina, and we were the 10th fastest growing state. That's why there's a huge opportunity for the next governor of South Carolina. They're all coming from New York and California. In Ohio, now they tend to have more conservative values or be independent. They're not raging libs, generally speaking, because they're fleeing these blue states. And so we definitely don't want a California, South Carolina. And I hope, like, heck, that he will accept my debate challenge. I love a good debate, and I would love to take him and his hair gel on.
He's jet setting out of here. I think this afternoon. So I'm sure he'll be ready to get out of here very quickly.
Too much hospitality
here. His hair is too slick. I can't trust him. Nobody can.
That's fair.
It's fair. Well, it would fit in with the humidity. Congresswoman Nancy Mace joining us on the show. Thank you so much, Congresswoman. We appreciate it. Look forward to having you back here very soon.
Thank you so much, y'all. Have a good one.